Welcome to East Meets West, episode 10. I'm Tom Merritt.
10. Have we come this far?
Yes, and in fact, we're getting so fancy, I actually did a level check.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My name is Roger Chang, for those who don't know.
Wow.
Or actually, Jason should
Even
know.
Though we did a level check, you look louder than me.
It's because I'm a loud kind of guy.
I just need to buy another mic. You know what? I tried to use a different mic, but it only had a 16th inch input.
16th
and
inch.
And it wouldn't, or 8th inch. Anyway, it wouldn't go in the quarter inch jack on the mixer, so.
So you couldn't put a plug into a jack?
I have an adapter, and it works fine for headphones, but it wouldn't work for that mic. And the mic works fine, because I plugged it directly into the laptop, and it worked just fine.
Because the headphones are stereo and the mic is mono?
Probably. Probably why.
But enough of our trivial concerns.
No, we have to start paying attention to what we're doing here on East Meets West. We're getting some publicity.
Yeah, we've increased our listenership.
We've doubled. Doubled our listenership.
50? Not 50, 100%.
Yeah, because as you know, Jason, from listening to the other podcasts, you were our only listener. But Andy in Tennessee, who is also a Buzz Out Loud listener, said that he had listened to the past couple episodes, actually. He had already listened to an episode last week, and I just sort of... we just sort of passed over it, but he got hungry listening to the P.F. Chang's discussion on episode 8.
Yes, it was quite lively discussion about P.F. Chang's, and that's cool. Two viewers or listeners,
and now he said episode 9 was better because we did not discuss Chinese food, but now here we've gone and done it again.
I'm sorry, blame me, the Asian guy.
We've got an East Meets West specific email.
Ooh.
From Jason. He said he caught the pod.
What does it say?
It says, "I caught the last podcast on Monday. Since you are a journalist, I think I made the mistake of bandying around the term journalist in the last podcast."
Yeah, when I look at you, I think of Tom.
Yeah, it's a journalist. I do have a degree. I have a BS in journalism.
Yeah, however appropriate. I actually have a BS in radio and television.
Yeah,
arts.
That's pretty close to journalism. So anyway, he says, since you are an alleged journalist, I'm going to put the alleged in there for
you. Should
him.
Put quotes.
Did you hear about the student newspaper on Prince Edward Island that published the Muhammad cartoon and was forced by the student union of the university to return the newspaper on threat of being reported to the police? So I guess they printed it, but we're not allowed to distribute it. Interesting notion of free speech in a college environment. And then he also asks, how did you and Roger get your starts in technology, journalism, and what are your backgrounds? So I want to start with the first thing about Prince Edward Island. I had not heard about that until he wrote me, but right after that, a friend of mine from college wrote me about the Daily Illini in Champaign, Illinois, firing their editor who reprinted the Muhammad cartoon.
Hmm. Well, you know, I can't really speak to your buddies or the Illinois college, but I know in Canada there's actually a hate speech law where you cannot distribute or broadcast any media or media forms that would incite racial or religious or sexual sexual orientation.
Hateful speech. And that was a big deal in the United States several years back, people debating whether there should be hate speech laws, and it was a big deal on campuses.
And
as well.
Even groups like the ACLU, there was that one case, actually notorious case by the ACLU, where they actually defended a KKK member. I thought was it the early 80s?
Yeah, I thought it was late 80s, but yeah.
But literally, they lost a huge chunk of their membership that way. And, you know, at that time, it seemed like, for them, the right thing to do. But of late, they've seemed to actually take kind of a tacit turn, about turn, phase.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what I was saying about my journalism professor in college who taught journ law, saying that you always support free speech for the speech that you don't mind. Even if you don't necessarily agree with it, it's always, everybody believes that there is a limit to free speech. And he demonstrated that by, you know, picking on a few people in class, basically, and saying, you know, so you think 100% free speech, what about this case? What about that case? And you'd always find something where people would say, well, no, okay,
I mean,
you can't say that.
Even in Europe, I mean, people don't might not realize it, but they actually have some very stringent restrictions on certain types of speech. For example, anything that would deny the Holocaust, for example, in Germany, is illegal. You cannot say that the Holocaust never happened in, like, a newspaper print.
Right. You can't. A lot of those things are publishing specific, broadcasting or publishing versus, like, saying you can't say it.
Oh, that's
you know,
true.
Which is a fine distinction, but
it is. But you know, at what point when you have a little, like, say, a little newsletter that goes around, does that, you know, stay from, you know, kind of a low level to kind of a mass media broadcast? And it is a fine line. You know, I would probably err with the school in that, you know, it is their kind of discretion, you know, to allow certain things because it is one of their programs. It has taken place on their campus where they have responsibility.
Well, it reminds me a lot of the World of Warcraft debate where it's not a matter of free speech per se because the people who run the paper, as in the people who ran the game, can do whatever they want. There's no legality, right? It's like when people get on a message board on the internet and get mad for you kicking them off or deleting their posts and they cry free speech. Well, guess what? You know what? You are free to go start your own message board and say whatever you want. But anyone can stop you from saying something in their own arena. And so the question becomes less about free speech and it's more about should they, in fact, be limiting this publication or not?
Yeah.
Because it's not the government who's coming in and saying you shouldn't publish the Muhammad cartoon. It's the paper.
Yes.
And so the debate comes not so much, you know, should they be allowed to print this, but should the school be censoring it or should the school be supporting the free publication? Which is a very valid question, and more to the point.
It's probably one of those things where we need, if we ever had the capability to get someone from that school or campus to issue an email or something, so we could get some sort of response or perspective on the whole incident.
So if a third listener is out there and happens to have connections to Prince Edward
or
Island
fourth
or
fifth, you know, why limit ourselves to?
Well, it's kind of like the third man, you know, like in.
I'm thinking the fourth estate, so the fourth person.
Wait, is the third man, or the what am I thinking of? The sixth man,
baseball
the
diamond,
12th man. I don't know, some sort of sports analogy.
Sure.
That brings us to talking about equipment, because I was fooling around with Skype.
Fooling around is again a very apt description.
How to get Skype to work with Audacity, which so if a third or even Jason or Andy know how to do that, let me know. What I've been doing is running Skype. Basically, Russ Pitts from Gamers with Jobs Radio, formerly of Tech TV and Sub Brilliant Television, was telling me what he does is he runs Skype on one box and then just runs the audio out and records. That part was working. I couldn't get the levels to work out fine. And then Roger and I tried to get Skype to work on one computer and record into Audacity. We couldn't get that to work. But hopefully we'll be able to take some callers, and maybe if I move far away from Roger, we'll have to take callers because he won't want to drive all the way over there.
Yeah, because once you move out to where you might move out to, it is some distance for me to traverse, and in the absence of any kind of new teleportation technology.
Well, you got a car.
It's true. No, I don't. That's a borrowed car.
Well, you drove it here, right?
It's true.
It's really not that far, much farther to Oakland. Anyway, also on the equipment, I'm stuck with this bad mic, but I'm in the nice chair tonight. So I think that's going to be, until I get another mic, that's going to be the system. Is if you sit in the folding chair, you get the Shure mic. If you sit in the leather office chair, you get the crappy Radio Shack mic.
I think it's a good trade-off.
Yeah,
but let's answer.
Jason's
question.
Getting bored with this. His second question was, "How did you and Roger get your starts in technology journalism, and what are your backgrounds?" And this won't be very suspenseful for Jason because I already answered him by email. So why don't we start with you?
I actually have a background in radio, television, broadcasting, right. And I started at Tech TV or ZDTV as it was known at the time as a PA. or actually an intern, and then they hired me as a PA 3 months on.
And you were an intern in the graphics department, were you not?
No, I was an intern with Screensavers and Call for Help.
I thought you actually, maybe I'm confusing you with someone else. I had
a major in graphics art.
Oh, okay. And then
I realized after talking to a few people, it doesn't make a whole lot of change.
Okay.
So I moved on into computer programming, and then I got really bored with listening to people talk.
Yeah, because you don't want to make all that money the programmers make.
You know what? They don't make that much money either, especially if you're just one of the monkey coders who sits there and just types out, you know, something for a pump over at PG&E and stuff like that.
Well, between posts on Slashdot.
Yeah.
You're pumping out that code.
It's true. But, you know, unfortunately, most of that's being farmed out overseas. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's being farmed out overseas.
All right. So you went to school.
I went to school.
You got a degree in graphic design.
And radio and television.
Radio, television, film. And then you got an internship.
At ZDTV.
During the dot-com boom.
No, at ZDTV.
A startup television network that was desperate for people.
They were desperate. They were desperate for people at the time they hired me.
And then the magic just went from there.
Yeah, and it was quite fortunate enough to work with a few high caliber people, or rather very pedantic people who were very big sticklers about editorial, and that's kind of what I kind of got raised on while I was working there.
Yeah. Well, I would attribute a lot of that to Jim Lauterbach and the lab.
We couldn't use his name, can we?
Why not?
Nah, just kidding.
Yeah. why not?
What's wrong with
you? You don't work at CNET anymore.
I work for him, though.
Oh, that's true. Conflict of interest. You have to disclose that. See,
I work at Ziff right now, so.
And you were saying something complimentary. It's not like you're dissing him.
No.
About his poor management skills.
Oh, jeez. Hey, that wasn't me. That wasn't me. That was Tom.
Anyway, so as Jason knows, and just in case Andy's curious, I got my start by going to the University of Illinois. I got a journalism degree. I worked for a couple of papers there. I was also, during school, the program director for a rock radio station in Champaign. I worked at a radio station in high school, not a high school radio station, but a commercial radio station. And I worked at a commercial radio station during college as well. And then from there, I took an internship at National Public Radio, did that for Morning Edition for a semester. Went to grad school at the University of Texas in Austin, and then sort of kicked around after that doing independent projects, writing, editing, did some access television, and started a website called Subbrilliant.com, which I turned into a working publication. I had people writing for me. I had a publication schedule. I was editing the material. I was publishing it. I was checking the traffic. And so I applied to ZDTV and described all this stuff to work at ZDTV.com. And the person who hired me, Gina Lynn, who also writes for Wired now, was the producer for the Screensavers at the time. And
Gina,
the same as when Roger was hired, they were quite desperate for people. So
at that
particular moment. And so they hired me.
Actually, they were desperate for competent people.
Yeah.
You should just...
Oh, whatever. You know what? They were desperate for people, even.
Hey, you know what? I remember when I applied for the web internship, they kind of laughed at me. So.
Really?
They weren't that desperate.
Well, Gina kindly gave me a break, and then I offed her. She left.
Yeah, but she
left for Oxygen 2 months after
you
she hired
actually
me.
Came after me, which is... Right.
No, actually, you were the first person I had to work with.
Yeah.
Because Gina was like, okay, we have these questions
and
answers.
Yeah,
you have to go get the answers from Roger, and he's really lazy and won't put them in vignettes, so he'll just email them to you.
Oh, geez, thanks. All right. No,
I thought I could slide that one by.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's what they told me to do, and that's what the web group told me to do, because at the time, the guy that you replaced, Alex, was very fond of having stuff emailed to him so he could kind of...
I do remember, though, after Gina left, because Gina was only there, like I said, for a couple months before she hopped down to Oxygen in L.A., because that was booming at the time as well. And I remember going to you and saying, hey, is there any way I could get you to put these in vignette? And you're like, well, I'd rather not. Vignette being the content management system we use, which was quite cumbersome, to put it kindly.
Clunky?
Yeah, it was pretty clunky, although I miss it.
I actually started doing that, didn't I, at one point, or no?
I think you did. I think I wrangled you into doing it for like a week, and then it was just...
Well, yeah. At the time, I was kind of worried because the guy you replaced really didn't do that much, so I didn't think
you were
that.
Suspicious.
I was like, yeah, okay, you want me to do what?
Can you just do my job for me, thanks.
You correct your grammar.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't start a sentence with a conjunction.
Well, and then the way I moved up at ZDTV was people got laid off.
He actually knocked them off, but yeah.
Well, Gina left voluntarily to go to Oxford.
Under a cloud of rumors.
And then after that, it was every round of layoffs they'd say, oh, well, we still need somebody to do this. Tom, can you do it? And so I kept getting more junk dumped on me.
Yeah, I remember those power lunches you took an hour or two.
Yeah, I never took a lunch. If I was lucky, I got to run over to the crockery and grab a burger.
See, there was your mistake. You just run downstairs to Moda.
Oh, yeah.
For your
no, Moda, I went to Moda quite a bit.
Modus operandi.
The little lunch shop that was in the bottom of 650 Townsend. Now, where ZDTV was, it's not there anymore. Is Moda still there?
Yeah. I was there late last year to... middle of last year to shoot a thing with Sega.
Oh yeah,
and they have Sega, but they have not filled that vacancy. Our whole floor is still
really?
Empty. It's creepy because they actually still have those security doors that lead up to where Navarro used to sit.
Uh-huh.
They still have the little tech TV, like you know, tech TV door.
The sign,
not the big one, but like a little small plate lit over you know by the door. Uh-huh. They still have those.
Well, G4 is probably still paying for it because that they ran a lease to like 2008.
Yeah,
they forced him into a lease, and CNET is paying for part of that lease because ZDNet had to sign that same lease, and G4 is probably paying the other half of it.
Well, in any case, that place, that whole office / fashion center is doomed. There's no huge anchor. It's like a mall. You need your anchor stores.
We have Sega.
Yeah, believe me, Sega ain't doing all that well.
They ain't that anchor. Well, because I remember at one point it was. Tech TV was the small fry, and there was Sega and Macromedia and...
Macromedia moved out next door.
Little places. And then Macromedia jumped. Sega laid a bunch of people off.
In San Diego.
Yeah, Tech TV just disappeared. Now, they laid a bunch of people off at 650 Towns because I had a friend who worked there. And she survived. She made it through the cut.
Oh, interesting.
That was right before the sell-off. They had a big sell-off of Dreamcast materials.
I was actually at a field shoot, so I missed it. So I had to buy a bunch of stuff off with Josh Lawrence.
I made it in too late. I could have bought some things, but all the actual Dreamcast boxes were gone, so it would have been pointless.
Yeah, well, they're still kind of fun.
I guess I could have picked a used Dreamcast up pretty easily, but whatever.
You want to buy mine?
Yeah, I can now. I can give you $5 for it.
Oh, geez, thanks.
That's what I paid for my Commodore 64 replacement.
A brick?
$5. $5 at Goodwill in Austin. You've been to that Goodwill in Austin, right?
I've been to a Goodwill, but not the one in Austin.
Not the computer Goodwill? They have a Goodwill.
You guys took me to the bars. You didn't take me to the Goodwill.
Next time we're going to the computer Goodwill. It's in North Austin, if it's still there. I haven't been
there
for a few
years. Steve
Austin,
what?
And it is a Goodwill full of computer parts.
So they don't sell the other Goodwill knickknacks?
No, it's like the Goodwill computer annex, and they have cables and monitors and old boxes. And
is there a bearded guy in Bermuda shorts behind the desk?
Yes, actually, there probably is. I don't know about the Bermuda shorts. There's a lot of bearded men in that place. And they have a working Lisa. Some of this stuff isn't for sale.
Hey, I knew a couple of leases that worked. You don't go throwing things that leases don't work.
Talking about the Apple Lisa. But it was a working model of the Lisa, and they had an Altair in there. And
complete with all the little switches.
Yeah, with all the little switchy switches. And
that you really, you know, if you think about it, couldn't do much except...
Except launch Microsoft. That's really all it did.
Yeah.
I mean... By implication, anyway.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, that pretty
that's
much.
That's where we would have paused for our ad.
Yes.
Right there. See, that's the saving grace of professional podcasts is they have places where they can pause for advertising.
Yeah, whatever. They're just a bunch of shills.
You know, advertising is going to take on a lot of podcasts, and I don't think people mind. You know what? Buzz Out Loud has an Earthlink ad in the middle of it, and we were all worried when we first put it in there, and really people have not... I mean, they complain more about the fact that it's the same darn ad every time.
Yeah, I'm
without
sure.
Without a change of copy than they do than the fact that it's actually there.
I mean, do you guys read copy for the ad?
No,
or
we,
do
don't,
you guys...
we don't read it. We make somebody else do it. So that there's no...
conflict of interest.
There's no...
You don't
worry.
Do you don't do the Howard Stern?
No. Or the
visit
Sweet
your
Train.
You know, there was that whole... You know the thing with one of the studio guys who worked at the studio crew. Before he got that job, he worked at one of the local radio stations, and he had a deal with Sleep Train that got him removed from his...
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, because, you know, all of the morning jocks get, at least around San Francisco, and I've heard it in other cities, they get the Sleep Train commercial, and they have to read it live.
Well, you know, just listen to Howard Stern and him... plug in the various.
Yeah, but you know what? Howard Stern isn't a journalist. He is an entertainment personality. It becomes a problem is when you're doing a show where you have to report and evaluate things. Then it becomes a conflict. You know, if I have, let's say, if we get Windows as a sponsor, we get Microsoft as a sponsor of East Meets West, if we read the copy for it, it's a problem because...
We're not really journalists.
Actually, you know what? With East Meets West, it's not a problem. We will sell our East Meets West soul.
I'll sell the plot that my future, you know, I don't know, body will lay in.
You know what we should do? We should do the eBay stunt that Rocket Boom did.
Which was?
They put up... their ad space for sale. They decided they're going to take an ad in Rocket Boom, and they put up the ad space for sale on eBay.
Do you know how much it eventually went for?
They had a reserve price of like $15,000 or something. And they're very widely distributed. And they were doing it for real. They were seriously... that is the way they were selling their ad. But, you know, it'd be kind of fun to see if, you know...
You know, in the cool...
Between Andy and Jason, maybe 10 cents we could get.
The cool thing is that I think, you know, we should strive for a variety of different commercials. Not just, like, technology, automobile, or like, you know...
wow,
like, toiletries. I'm thinking, like, you know...
Crest.
No, I'm thinking products from, you know, people you never thought. I don't know, the local Ranch 99 market.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, more personal advertisements.
Yeah, my personal.
Like the seafood shack. And what's the name?
What do you keep calling these?
I've never.
It's a Fisherman's Galley in Modesto.
At least
California.
I call it a Chinese restaurant.
No.
I still remember that day.
Well, that's
on Call for Help when Leo said, you know, well, your dad runs a Chinese restaurant.
I was like, this is a CIA restaurant.
He just looked darts at it, man. Like, it was awesome.
It's like, no.
And Leo felt bad. He really honestly
I'm did. Sure. He felt bad for about like 2 minutes and then he moved on.
Well, I'm sure by now we have blown off all our listeners with our self-indulgent memory lane talk.
What are you talking about? That's what we've been doing for the past eight. What do you think makes him so? Okay, all right. So perhaps we could tell Jason how he too could quicken his pace on the road to technology.
Well, okay,
journalism.
Yeah. Let's read the rest of the email. Actually, he says he's interested in journalism himself, just from seeing shoddy reporting and dubious editorial standards.
Hey! I never worked for that paper.
I think he was discussing Roger's career. I'm studying electrical engineering as well, so I have a long journey ahead if I want to continue with EE and start into journalism. He has a Flickr page up where we saw a picture of what appeared to be his son Harrison being boiled in red oil. Or maybe he was just taking a bath. I'm not sure. Good show. Hope others start listening and commenting. But he will keep the streak going. And Jason, you know what? We should make this clear with all the commercial talk. Free of charge. You can keep the comments coming. We'll never charge Jason for any appearances on this podcast.
And when do you ever charge anyone? When do you charge any guest for an appearance?
Well, no, I mean, like, you know, if he becomes a very successful journalist or engineer.
When he becomes
powerful,
a rich man.
Yeah.
Able to quash us.
He's also looking for a good web hosting provider.
You know a few.
Yeah, I think I sent him Corner Host is mine that I like. But there's so, you know what, I'm loath to give out those recommendations with any definitiveness because there are so many hundreds of really good web host providers out there. I mean, go for the mom and pops. Don't go for the big busters unless you're really planning on doing a bandwidth intensive site. But if you're doing something like sabrilliant.com or, you know, just your own personal site that you want to have your own domain, go for go for the small boys that charge $100 or less a year, and just ask around for get a lot of different recommendations and compare the programs. Cornerhost.com is the one that hosts Subrilliant.com, and I love it. Michael Wallace is the guy who runs it. He's fantastic. They have had some technical issues over the December break, but Michael's always good at keeping people up to date on what's going on and trying to fix the problem. He will answer your emails personally. He has a whole thing called the Corner Host Insiders List where you can discuss PHP and you can discuss how to set up a WordPress blog, and people discuss things on there that I don't even understand. And so I really like them. But I have heard all kinds of other good things about other hosts. Ruby on Rails provides their own web hosting environment that I heard is very good.
Actually, what is Ruby? I've heard it.
It's a content management platform.
Now, is it open source or is it complete? Yeah. Yeah, that was a hook. And it's not one technology. It's a series of technologies exactly. Combined together.
I think Ruby is a technology. Rails is a technology. And then there are other technologies within.
But it's kind of packaged as a single entity, so it's kind of turnkey start to finish. You don't have to go.
Well, yeah, you can get Ruby on Rails and run it on your own server, or Ruby on Rails actually does a web hosting company as well that uses Ruby on Rails. The way some people use MySQL.
Well, and that's probably one of the other things to look at a hosting is what are their capabilities, service
yeah,
to run
server
side apps.
Yeah, what do you need, and what do they have? The reason I went with CornerHost. They have MySQL, which is good for WordPress. They have
I like the original one too.
They have the ability to do CGI, run Perl scripts, execute Perl scripts, which I actually don't need that much anymore. But back when I first did it, I did. And the thing that hooked me, you can run as many domains as you want off of one account. Whereas a lot of people will charge you extra for every
domain.
He's just like, hey, flat rate. You can set up as many domains as long as you don't go over your megabits or your bandwidth for your account. Doesn't cost extra for the. He's like, I don't care if you re-forward different domains. So
you can have literally as many as long as you don't go beyond the metered bandwidth you already paid for.
Yeah.
Or
the metered bandwidth's pretty high. I've never even gotten close to it.
This podcast is going to change that.
Now Jason's just going to bot me to death. No. Yeah, the only thing I'm worried about is I have an RSS feed running off my WordPress, because WordPress just automatically does it. Mm-hmm. And then Leo told that story a couple twits ago about getting hammered when he put an RSS feed for Twit on his own server.
Oh, but yeah. You know why? It's because he was... Wasn't he hosting his...
Well, he did it on SonicNet. Is what I thought I understood.
Yeah, no, he but what he? Oh, that's right. You know why? I think it was because all the directs for that feed for that.
Well, it was the way he explained it was only every RSS request was only a 30K request.
Yeah.
But people set up their RSS feeds to check every 2 minutes or more.
Oh, I see.
It builds up. Even though they're not getting anything, it wasn't that they were downloading the podcast itself.
They were actually just requesting.
They were just hammering with requests, exactly.
Yeah, that's 30. Yeah, he came out with like what was it, $30,000?
Yeah,
something
like that. Crazy, crazy talk. So anyway, we have not given Jason any advice yet on what to do. I guess what I would say, besides the web hosting stuff,
move west.
It's awfully hard to double major. I'm not discouraging anyone from doing it, but to double major in EE and journalism, I would say it's important to take some writing classes, some editorial classes, learn how to spell correctly and write good grammar, learn good style, which is the harder one to learn, honestly. But you may not need a journalism degree to become a tech journalist, as long as you have the skills of writing, which you need to learn, but you don't necessarily have to have the degree. It may serve you better to stick with the EE, because then you have that option of getting an engineering job, but you also have the experience in electrical engineering to write from.
And the other key is, you know, again, you don't necessarily have to take a journalism course to apply for a journalism degree, but do take a journalism course to kind of
understand
understand the editorial process. And it's one of the things that, you know, that separates the wheat from the chaff, you know, to use a cliche term, but it's really, you can always tell who's the better writer, or the better writer, just from their kind of editorial stance. For instance, you see a lot of websites out there comparing hardware. You know, you have a lot of these CPU review sites, and you know what? When these guys say, yeah, you know, to prove our worth, we even, you know, run our benchmarks twice, to me that inspires very little confidence, because benchmarking is a very kind of meticulous, very kind of detailed-oriented process, and it's something that you need to run, you know, more than two times, some minimum of three, to kind of average out your numbers. And it's one of those things, methodology and stuff, that you can look at, and you can tell the people who just kind of do it for shit, you know, shits and giggles, and the other people actually take kind of a very serious view at it. And, you know, things like Anantech and Tom's Hardware were known for having that kind of intrinsic quality to really kind of take everything to the limit and then repeatedly do it, so they could always come up with a consistent and concise answer for their viewers.
And I think that you can. It is very important, if you are a journalist, first and foremost, to know what you're writing about. Know your topic. Be an expert in your area. Because you can write like God and still have a really bad article because you don't know what you're talking about. Now, it's just as bad to know what you're talking about and not be able to communicate. You have to have both.
You mean like Matt Lauer when he was talking to Tom Cruise? He was accused.
You don't know the history of psychology, Roger.
I think it's, as Tom succinctly put it, Matt was glib.
And I don't. So anyway, it,
yeah,
you can learn to write through experience, whereas it's much harder to learn engineering.
Engineering is probably the way to go, because you'll probably get an insight into the process. However, you're going to also have to be kind of cautious, because oftentimes, especially with engineering, that it's really easy to kind of get sucked into one particular school of thought.
That's true.
And it's always wise to kind of every now and then step back, because, you know, my dad was a structural engineer, so.
And if you go that route, you can get a job, take volunteer writing for a weekly magazine or a paper on campus, just your own website.
Yeah, or even if you want, you know, submit copies to a well-established and well-received, you know, tech site, you know.
Like Ziff Davis.
Ziff is not a bad place to go. And, of course, you know, stay with people, you know, like us.
Yeah.
Who can give you advice.
All right. Well, thanks, Jason and Andy, for listening in.
Thank you.
We hope you did this time. That's it for episode 10, our 10th anniversary episode.
Woohoo! What should we do? Pop the cork?
Yeah, let's go eat some chicken. Adios, folks.